Welcome everybody to the August meeting of the Emergency Preparedness Committee of the Kensington Fire Protection District. Today is Thursday, August 24th. The time is 3:04 p.m. And I'm Larry Nagel. I'm the co-chair of the committee. And we will start with a roll call. So Larry Nagel is present, Don Bummer, present. Lisa Corona is not here, she will be here shortly. Katie Cook is not here. Peter Liddell is not here, he will be here shortly.
Katie actually showed up in the attendees, promoter.
Oh yes, Katie is in that one of the parties.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, there we go.
Daniel Madugo?
Here.
Paul Moss?
Here.
David Spatt?
Here.
Okay, and we also have attending by remotely our interim general manager, Mary Morris Mayorka. And we have our executive assistant, board clerk, Candace Arias-Diaz. And our emergency preparedness coordinator, Johnny Townsley. So before we can begin, there's Lisa. Lisa Corona is now present and accounted for. And Lisa, I think she's on.
Katie is. Are you?
The other two. Yeah.
So I would entertain, first order of business, I will entertain a motion to allow Katie Gluck to attend this meeting remotely.
I'll move that we allow Katie Gluck.
Moved by David Spatt, seconded by Dan. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, Katie, you're in.
May I say that I heard from Peter a little while ago, and he's fighting his way back from San Francisco. He's planning on being at the meeting.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, and the next order of business is public comment. I see we have participating 6 people at this point. Does anybody have any public comments that they'd like to make, either from the committee or from the audience? Yes, Lisa.
I just want to report that a few weeks ago, I drive by the Sunset Cemetery on my way home normally, and there were cars parked right in our evacuation route. There were 2 cars, and I think people sometimes park there to walk through the facility, and they kind of like park in front of those gates.
On your gate.
Yeah, so I reported this to David Aranda and the police via email, and they said they would look into it, because we have to kind of work out in the room. There's not a real clear sign that there's no parking ever here. So I noticed today that they were actually painting that little strip with a red band. I assume they'll put some stripes or something in it and add signage. So I just want to say that it looks like it's being dealt with and taken care of. It's very encouraging and really quick time. And that it's something if people see, I think we should report this. It could be a big roadblock to what already will be a difficult situation.
Thank you, Lisa. That's,
they were very responsive.
Good to hear that we were able to get a problem fixed that easily.
Yeah.
Any other public comments? And I'll go on to the consent items then. And we have 7 sets of minutes to approve, but none of them are there, so we'll move that on to
the next one. And I think we actually captured the December 8th at the last meeting. Do you recall that, Candace?
I know, but I can check.
Okay. So other than that, yeah, we finally caught up with the board meeting minutes, so I think we'll be able to.
I have in progress. I have minutes for June 22nd and July 27th, but I don't go any further back than that.
Okay, thank you.
I'll keep nibbling backwards, and you guys keep nibbling.
We'll go forward.
Thanks.
Perfect.
Okay, old business. There are a couple things left over from the last meeting or meetings. And one, and all of these have to do with Mary, who's been kind enough to join us, even though she's got a dinner date tonight.
Yes.
And the first item is an update on finding a replacement on the emergency preparation, emergency preparedness committees. We are replacing Peter Guerrero, who works. Who had to resign from the committee because he couldn't be here in person, and the regulations don't allow people to miss more than three meetings or be remotely three meetings or something like that.
Yeah.
So you want to give us an update, Mary, sure. On what the situation was, inviting a new member, please?
Yes. So the process, just kind of as a refresher, is that anyone interested in serving on the committee would complete an application, and it's located on the district website. I updated it to make it PDF fill-inable so that the potential applicants can complete it that way. I also added a link to the committee description in board policies so that anyone applying to serve on the committee would understand what the board's charge of that committee is, of this committee. And then also the fact that the member would be subject to the conflict of interest policy. So then filing a Form 700, just so that they're aware of the requirements that go along with serving on the committee. So pushed that out to a couple of lists through the website, and then Johnny pushed it out through Nextdoor. I know I spoke earlier with Director Nagel and wondered, Johnny, if there's other places that we should potentially post this, publications, newsletters that might be beneficial to try to capture members. So Johnny, do you have any feedback on that?
Yeah, depending on the timing, we could also do something in the fire plug, which I'll mention later, which should go out in September or beginning of October. And we also have the volunteer list that's growing. We have more than a dozen people that have signed up through that. And we may be able to capture people that have volunteered for the door hanger distribution that have also said they'd like to more about what's going on and how they can help.
Okay, so we'll kind of monitor how many we receive in conjunction with when you're getting that publication ready to see if we need to put the advertisement in there. Okay. So any questions on that?
When is the next fire plug due out?
I'm slating it for no later than the end of the first week of October, because there's some posts in there that I want to make sure that we get out to the community by mid-October. So anywhere between the end of September and the beginning of October.
Okay. I don't know if the timing would permit, whether we want to wait on that or see. If we don't have much in the way of responses by the time that goes out, it would be good. I think good to put that in a fire plug.
Yeah, Johnny, we definitely will.
Did you mention putting it in the Outlook possibly?
Yeah,
that would also go out. The deadline for that is in the beginning of October, but of course all these other channels will be contingent on the response from what we see.
Yeah.
Thanks. Hey, Johnny, do we have many more block parties in the know at this point?
It's kind of follow-ups from, well, I'll go over that in my report.
Okay. I was just thinking if we'd had a stack of flyers at that block party last Saturday, we could have passed them out there as well. We still can, actually. We can give them a bunch of flyers, and we can give the Firewise community up on Kensington Court a stack of flyers.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Excellent. Sounds like that's coming on. Hopefully we'll locate a replacement by October, in the month of October, something like that.
Yeah.
Something to set our sights for.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll just roll into my next item.
Sure. Go ahead.
So the update on the potential for using the Laguna Beach contract kind of sole source for purchasing of LRADs from Genesis, if the board had determined to proceed with that. So I found all of the information, and I'm pretty certain that there would be no issue with it. I found Berkeley's documentation where they utilized Laguna Beaches. So I've pushed that through to our legal counsel so they can review it. And I have a call with them tomorrow, so I'll know probably concretely by tomorrow. But I wouldn't anticipate that, you know, if for some reason Berkeley could do it, that there would be any reason that we would not be able to do that. So we should be able to use it. And I'll update you once I get final confirmation.
They did, right? They did. Okay. Good.
And that would be with Kensington only. We wouldn't have to join with El Cerrito?
Because my understanding is I don't think El Cerrito is at a point to progress with those at this point in time. So, yeah, we wouldn't need to be jointly doing that. But we'd, of course, have to figure out the funding and on all of that. But this would just be with respect to even looking at an RFP or any kind of proposal. So,
thank you.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much the same thing, whether it would be Kensington only or Kensington and El Cerrito, whether or not we can use that contract as sole source to do the same.
Yeah.
Chief Sailors will be here around 3:30. He's tied up in another meeting, but he will be here as long as the creek doesn't rise. Okay, great. Thanks, Mary. You want to jump on?
Oh, we have. Sorry, there's a hand up in the attendees. Julie Beach, do we want to take that? I'm not sure if it's on this item, but Julie.
Hi, guys. I'm so sorry. My name on there is my maiden name. This is Julie Cavallero, the Community Warning System Manager. Mary, I just wanted to touch base with you because I haven't heard from anybody from Kensington with the exception of your CERT team. How and what conversations have been had planning on integrating this LRAD system into the community warning system that exists? And what policies and procedures are we discussing to put in place to make sure that we don't end up not actually utilizing federal tools because there's confusion amongst who's going to control the LRADs and then also send out the warnings?
So that question, I'm not sure about the answer to. Is that premature, or is anyone on the committee have information relating to that? So we might need to do a little more investigation. So maybe Julie, we could touch base offline and kind of coordinate a little bit so that I'm aware of everything we should pay attention to.
I'm happy to fill you in, Mary. I believe Mary has my contact, but I'll forward it over. Thank you.
Okay. Perfect. Sure. Okay. All right. No other hands. So the last item on my update was the $25,000 budget line item for replanting grants. This had been in the budget in the past, and at least last year, and not utilized. And so we did not include it in the budget going forward. But I think we discussed in the last committee meeting that it seemed the committee wanted to continue that. So we have a finance committee meeting. We're scheduling that now for September 7th. So I will propose bringing that back into the budget so that they can, that's where they will be adopting the final budget. They'll be reviewing the final budget for adoption at the September board meeting, but that way we can incorporate that item.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mary.
I saw Julie, is your hand up again for this item or?
I think I double clicked. I'm so sorry.
Okay, no problem. Just making sure. Okay.
Okay, while we're waiting for Chief Sailors, maybe we'll take some of this out of order. Johnny, would you be willing to give your emergency preparedness coordinator's report at this point?
Yeah, I can. Let me see. I'll just do an update on the door hangers. I think we're about 70% complete with the distribution. Some good things that we found were some of the volunteers were able to find addresses that weren't on the master list. So those addresses are being updated for our records. The list that we use is provided from Mailstream, which is our vendor that sends out anything that we use for the publications that we mail out. So they base that list off the USPS records. So if there were addresses that weren't on the list that we use for this distribution list, that means that they didn't have it for when we send out mailers. So that's going to be updated, and then I'll update that with the with Mailstream. The feedback that we've gotten from when I was going through the National Night Out events, there was some positive feedback on the door hangers. They said it was very impactful and concise. So that's good to hear. The red flag email list that we have has up to 668 subscribers. It keeps ticking upward. I have signs that are placed throughout the community, and they're going to be rotating around to different spots. So we have a consistent amount of people that are seeing the signs throughout the community and on the trails and on the paths, and that are signing up for the email subscription for the red flag notifications. The shredding event is going to be slated for October 28th, and that'll include the medical collection in coordination with the police department. And the venue is tentatively at the Unitarian Church, and it's pending confirmation from the church administrators. So I'm waiting to hear back from them before I start the campaign to let the community know. And that'll be published in the October Outlook and the Fireplug as well. Like I said, we have 14 people that are registered for the volunteer information, and I can likely increase that, the number of people that are subscribed to information for volunteer opportunities in the community. What else? Oh, the block parties. So we had on the north end of Purdue, there were 35 people that gathered. Was last weekend on Sunday for the preparedness block party, which was really engaging. It's probably the best session that we've had so far. We had firefighters from Station 55. So we had our firefighters there, Wildcat, Firewise. Alan was there to also introduce, you know, what he's been doing with the Firewise community, which was really good. There were some topics that he was really able to, you know, give substantive feedback on. So I think it was really valuable having all of us there. Like Larry, Paul, and Dave Bath were there. They were able to speak on a few things. And then Court with Wildcat Watch, he's naturally going to be there. He was just a couple doors down from his house. So it was really good, engaging topic or engaging conversation. And we had maps distributed. So 2 weeks before this happened, I walked with some of the community members, and they wanted to walk through the community to see, or their part of the community to look at the slope of some of the areas from their street to go down towards the lower street to Highland and possibly up towards Lake Drive. If any of their streets were blocked and they needed to get out on foot, they wanted to walk the streets and establish these paths. So I walked with them, and they had designated paths, which we created maps for, and they distributed out to the neighborhood. And their follow-up block party is going to be on September 10th to walk those paths that they designated through each other's private properties. And they're giving permission to each other to use those paths. And this is separate from the Kensington Path System. So it's kind of just a very organic development that's happening in that part of the community. So we're going to be walking that on September 10th. And then the day before, Wildcat Firewise is basically going to be doing the same thing on September 9th. So the meetings are seemingly, they're kind of happening more frequently. So that's really good for keeping that topic of prevention and preparedness on everyone's mind. And it looks like we're getting a lot more building that culture of coordination between all the neighbors. So it's good to see that happening. There's a lot of information that's being exchanged between Purdue and the Wildcat Firewise to see what can be duplicated. And then hopefully we are able to develop a Firewise community on the north end of Purdue, and we can start increasing what can be done across the community. What else was there? Oh, there was we did the tour at the Hazard Awareness Warning Center at PG&E in San Ramon, which was a really, it was really cool to see what they had there set up with all the screens and how the information streams in from all over the state. And how their infrastructure is tied into, status updates and stuff. So that was really cool to see their cameras. Anybody wants to chime in with their impressions of it that can speak more about the camera's capabilities and how that impacts the community. Danielle, do you want to say anything about that?
I can talk about that after your report, so we tour the facility and they monitor multiple hazards, including earthquakes, and there, how many fire cameras is it? 600?
Yeah, there were a lot.
600 belongs to, you have all the data. And they have two people on each geographic region 24/7, and they have not only a monitoring, they monitor that through pulse point, through radio broadcasts, like police broadcast, fire broadcasts, they monitor it through Caltrans, they monitor it through Twitter, they monitor it through an app that's very useful called Watch TV, and so that's all I know so far.
There's an article that'll be published in the Outlook, and then we'll also republish it on in the Fire Plug as well. So look for that.
Anybody wants to look at those cameras? Go to California. It's very interesting, and actually not only looking at the cameras, but it's worth reading what's going on there, the technologies that they're trying to implement. There's a number of studies going on looking at AI application to discover a fire through an AI process. And they're working with CAL FIRE and a number of local jurisdictions to validate that process. So it's not only an interesting site to look at the cameras, but it's an interesting read to see what's going on in that area.
It's Alert Wildfire.
It's Alert California. It's run by the University of California, San Diego. And as was said, PG&E controls a number of the cameras. CAL FIRE controls some of the cameras. And San Diego Gas and Electric also have control of the city. But it's possible about 1,000
replacements. Yeah, and the Alert Wildfire switch into California, over California, and then I think there's a Tahoe group that has their own setup in and Nevada too. So the University of Reno, Nevada runs, I think, Nevada, Oregon, and Washington.
And then Alert California is run by UC Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I think this whole camera thing started as sort of a joint research project between UC San Diego and University of Nevada at Reno. And so it's not surprising that there'd be a big concentration around Reno and a big concentration around San Diego.
Well, if you look at the map, it's more than just a concentration down there. The whole state is just that covered.
Oh, yeah, it's grown now.
As Paul said, the thousand.
The only real blank areas where you're expecting is Central Valley, because they're not dealing with this big threat as the coast and the mountains.
Well, as a fire suppression crewman on Kern County Fire Department, I will beg to do it.
Take a look at the map. There's quite a blank area. I mean, I'm not saying there aren't any, but there's alterations, obviously, around the
mountain. I don't know if you'd consider current Natty area.
Yeah, the
mountains and hillside are so good.
Yeah.
But they did say they're working to fill in the Central Valley because there are fires there and their fire cameras are all located in the mountains and foothills. And it'd be nice if they had some closer cameras as opposed to ones farther away. So they're starting to build that out in some way.
Excellent. Okay, Johnny, anything else on your report?
There was just one more thing for now. There's parking. I sent the fire and police chiefs a proposal to start developing a public awareness campaign with red flag in mind. So I'm going to follow up with them to see what we can do, as you know, just getting people parking one side of the street at least, as we look at doing configurations or changes on parking. So,
and Johnny, just as a follow-up, because I met with both of the chiefs yesterday, I think we'll have updates coming forward on kind of the clarification of the responsibility of which agencies, etc. So that we'll circle back with you on that in the next week or two.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that Alan Siegel has his hand raised. Can we?
Chris Hillier did too at a certain point, so I'm not sure if.
Oh, I didn't see that. Okay. All right, Alan, there.
Okay, can I speak? Yeah. I don't think my image is on there, but that's okay. So first, I wanted to thank Johnny for all his support for our Wildcat Firewise community. I mean, he's been always available and very, very helpful. And I'd also like to invite anybody on the board who would like to attend our simulated evacuation red flag drill. That's going to be 9 a.m. on September 9th. It's a Saturday morning. So the idea is it's not a real evacuation drill. We haven't had one of those, but it's to kind of get people out walking the walk and seeing what it's like, looking at where the danger spots are. And we're hoping Chief Beckman has said either he or a close associate will come to it. You all are welcome. And the idea is to both look at hazardous areas. Also, we're trying to get neighbors, particularly living on the west sides of the street, to open up an exit, because every single street in our Firewise community is a cul-de-sac. So if there was a blockage, we would need exits. And we now have three or four homeowners who have agreed to do that, and we're hoping to get more. So anyway, please join us if you have time. I know there's so much else going on and so much to do. And the one other thing I wanted to say is that one of the issues that came up after the Maui fire, and also the fire we had on Terrace Drive on August 8th, is the use of horns. I'm not on camera, but these little $15 signal horns, there was no warning in Maui, and we don't have an overall, I don't think, community signaling. So for people, particularly people hard of hearing, people are older, they may not know something is going on. So on the morning of September 9th, we're going to test a couple of these devices, these grotesque noises, and hopefully develop a protocol within our group here, how to warn people who might not be able to hear or might not be aware. So we'll let you know how that goes. It's a super low-tech kind of a thing because these are inexpensive. And we just have to make people promise they're not going to use it other than for an emergency. So thank you for support.
Alan, are these the air horns that sailors use on their sailboats?
The one I have here is called a signal horn. I think it was about $15. I mean, I saw it online. I was actually thinking of buying it more for crime prevention if somebody was trying to break in your house or something. But then after the Maui and the fact that we don't have a warning system and there's so many people who up where we are who are above 70, who are have hearing problems, who are disabled, and they may not hear something. So we're looking to, until there's some kind of community-wide warning siren system, we're looking to experiment, and that's what we're going to do. And we're going to set them off. If you hear anything on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock on the 9th, that's what it is. It's just an experiment. The same thing with the red flag drill. We just want people to walk the walk and see what it's like and be ready for it when the real thing does happen.
And that came up at the Purdue block party. They used the bullhorns to communicate. That was a tactic that they discussed that they were going to use to communicate with each other if there was a need to.
And I've been in touch with some of the other firewives.
Being used, and they're both bullhorns, and they're very loud. They work, and they were very cheap. I think I got two of them for 30 or 40 bucks. Bullhorns. Yeah.
I've been in touch with Miranda Araga and some of the other Firewise communities, and a lot of them they've spontaneously are considering the same kind of low-tech idea.
Great. Thank you very much, Alan. I see we have someone else.
Scott. Go ahead, Scott.
Hello, this is Scott Tipping. I'm a member of Make El Cerrito FireSafe. I just, regarding the red flag parking discussion, you may want to check in with Chief Sailors on that. There might be a parallel effort going on in El Cerrito, so maybe there might be some overlap there.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, we're expecting him 6 minutes ago, so we'll ask him that question when he gets here.
I heard some fire sirens not too long ago, so maybe he's further delayed.
I just want to clarify that police are responsible for the parking and evacuation. So it's a coordinated effort with fire. I think people tend to forget that the evacuation and the parking is under the jurisdiction of the police and the county. Because if we're going to change parking directions, the county would have to approve of that.
Yes.
At a request from the police department. So,
and I believe it has to be approved by some percentage of the residents as well.
I don't know that on parking that's the case, but certainly Lieutenant Harms sort of took that position that if he didn't get 100% concurrence on those cul-de-sacs off Westminster, that he wasn't going to pursue it. And so that was sort of in abeyance.
Yeah, I like to let everybody know that I spoke with Brad on Lieutenant Harms on his the day of his retirement, and I twisted his arm a little bit. It wasn't that difficult, and got him to agree to come to our meeting, the September meeting. He's going to basically give us an exit interview on parking and where he thinks we should go. And Chief Sailors has expressed interest, and I'll see if we can get somebody from the police department as well to hear that. Yeah, definitely. I'm working on it. And I just got a text message from Chief Sailors that he's on his way. So he's not on fire. Okay, I guess the next thing that we don't need the chief for would be a report by any of the subcommittees. John is pretty well given most of that report. Dave, do you want to say anything about the subcommittee that was going to identify community wildfire preparedness? I suppose that's what we're going to talk about next.
Yeah, but on the grant side of things, I would urge that we promote the Contra Costa Fire, the County Fire website, and Measure X funding, because there is money for individuals and groups of residents to apply for vegetation management on that site, because we're promoting. I think Alan Siegel mentioned that because when they had the get together. But I think it should be promoted. If residents are interested in doing vegetation management, there's money there to be had. And there's also money for starting up fireworks programs. If it's $5,000 that they will provide for the development of fireworks. And
who is they?
They being Contra Costa Fire, they oversee Measure X money.
Okay.
In regard to the emergency.
For sure.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, Johnny may have the link to that. My recommendation is that link.
I see Johnny has his hand raised. So,
yeah. So I think it's important to promote that and make people aware, make residents aware of the possibility of funding if they want to undertake vegetation management.
Okay, that sort of fits hand in glove with the $25,000 we're trying to get put back into the budget for planting.
Yeah, I don't know if Johnny wants to add to that.
Yeah, Johnny.
I recently met the county the coordinator for the county fire, and she did a mini presentation for through the Measure X process, the application process. So I reached out to her to see if she'd be willing to do a presentation for our community. I haven't heard back yet. So I'm going to follow up with her because I think it would be really valuable to at least invite someone from County Fire to come speak on that subject and do a little presentation walkthrough of the application. But she briefly went over it on a separate call that I was on.
The C-section? Because it was bridge. It was a C-section.
Alan, your phone is, your mic's on. Anyways, I'll let you know, and then we'll schedule that so that way we can promote a meeting so that everyone can attend, and I'll have it recorded as well.
Excellent. Okay.
About budgeting. I don't know what to make of this. My wife alerted me this morning, and I'm reading right now that, and people may have seen this, maybe I should keep my mouth shut a bit early, but there's been reports, a bunch of them I see, that FEMA is running out of disaster relief funds. And if they don't, they'll run out this next month if they don't get a big boost from Congress. I don't know how that affects us, our ability to get 75% of the LRAD funding done, but something I think we have to watch. I'm reading it from several sources.
Well, it's not a surprise.
No.
Considering how many different
disasters.
I think it's a different pot of money.
It's a different pot of money with regard to the FEMA grants. Those are allocated every year by
clients. Okay. I didn't know that's because it's disaster relief fund and not necessarily grant. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Okay, the record will show that Peter Liddell just joined us.
Welcome, Peter.
Thank you. We're taking things a little out of order because Chief Sailor is on his way. So we're in the committee reports. Does anybody want to give a report on the evacuation bill subcommittee? I don't really think we've done anything. We're hoping to still have a drill early next year. And I guess I've spoken with Jose Castrohome about that, and he's all gone up here. I have not spoken with anybody in the police department because we have to wait to see more places. Lieutenant Arms, who would have been the person going home about that. But I visit with the chief regularly. I'll probably keep on top of that. That's not really anything new to report. Yes.
You know, I just want to say that a little bit of what's happened on the COVID, it really stressed that the need for drills to evacuation coordination. You know, not just routes, but really coordination between agencies and testing systems to see how those work. And I think that's kind of brought it to the forefront for me to say, well, how are people really coordinated? Is it really working? How do we have a drill that tests what people do, but also what agencies do? Is that it? So anyway, I just think it's kind of a top of my mind. And it's a good moment to kind of rally the community around this evacuation issue. So I know that the police are understaffed, as they always do, even if they're stepped up. So I think you have to find a way. So I'm glad you're talking to people. I'm glad you're speaking to people who are planning on doing something in this regard. And I think it's very important.
There's two elements to that, at least from my perspective. One is a physical evacuation drill, but we could also have the county test its community warning system without having a physical evacuation. Like they did at one time, like 3 years ago, where they implemented a call to people, and for the lack of a physical evacuation drill in the near future, maybe bringing on another one of these community warning system approaches. And also the NICS, getting a NICS included system. So at least that would be a vehicle to see how well it works without the physical side of it. I think the physical side is important because we need to know what the pinch points are, how easily people can get out of the community. The shot of that, maybe another CWS drill would be worthwhile.
I agree with that. And we definitely would push, including the NICSL, that once the KPB gets the message, they have to be super prompt in getting some kind of test message by part of this drill out to Kensington Public, because that's where the local relations are. I would trust CWS to know what's going on in the lake. That's not going to happen. But if NICSL people are police, they should.
Katie's got her hand up.
Do we know who organized the last one? They activated a couple of zones or all of the zones?
No. They activated 8 and maybe 9. They activated 9 as well.
Yes. So no, we're in the same one.
Bobby?
They activated us and the one next to us, but they didn't tell
us. Yeah.
No, that wasn't not the evacuation drill, right?
Well, there was a previous exercise just doing CWS call.
Yes.
But there wasn't zoning yet, right?
No, but it was trying to at least see if people got and reacted to the CWS call.
And who did
that? That was Chris Hilliard and Joe Grupalo in 2021. That was the big boost in subscriptions for CWS registration, I believe.
Okay, Chris is on the call if he wants to chime in on this.
Katie has her.
Yes, and Katie has her hand up. So can we put Katie on?
There's also a request.
Yeah, she could actually speak, I think.
There's also a request to speak towards the mic if you can. Thank you.
Or speak loudly.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead, Katie.
Oh, I just wanted to say that I'm not able to hear Lisa or Paul Moss.
Oh,
that's
sure.
Yeah.
Start all over.
All right, thanks, Katie. We'll speak up. Can you hear me now?
That's better for me. I think just speak toward the center. We'll have to work on our mic.
I can hear you now, Lisa, but I couldn't hear a word you said earlier, nor could I hear anything that Paul Moss was saying. So thanks, guys.
Okay.
Well, I mean, if I assume Chris and Rapallo were involved in the previous one, but CWS the key, and I'm sure they coordinated with CWS on that first exercise. But if we want to do short of the physical evacuations, as I said, then we ought to coordinate again with CWS and make it happen.
Well, I think I don't want to call it a virtual evacuation group, but a drill just of CWS, we can organize, we should be able to organize at any time. Mm-hmm. It is not a huge drain on police staff, which the evacuation drill was. Okay. I mean, I think they had every sworn officer in the department there that morning, which is quite an accomplishment. But not something that they want to do every month.
But I want to stress again, personally, I think that ISIL has to be included in that.
For sure, year. Sure.
That's where the local information is, not the IC or the on-site or something. Maybe they would. We had a big discussion with CWS about that, and they said that the IC would tend to want to relay messages that were important to a certain locality, but that may be difficult to do. It's really a big fire, for example. They're going to be really dealing with a lot, but at least our police should be concerned about what's going on right here in West Vermont. And so that again, I want to say one more time, Nixle needs to be included.
Of course, if it's a big fire, then Nixle's going to be overloaded as well. So, okay.
Practically speaking, the first notice will be from CWS.
Right.
Yes.
And Nixle could be a second reinforced.
That was supposed to be
met
with more detail.
Given the police resources, the likelihood of knowing very much more is probably very remote, because the police will not be probably in the area very well. But be that as it may, it should start with CWS, and then Nixle should be a secondary and part of it.
Well, I think this is a good example of why we need to practice. Just to figure out all of these pieces and who's on first and what actually is happening.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't want to second guess, we want to test. So and we'll learn. So that's
great. I'd like to welcome Chief Saylor.
Thank you. Sorry for being late. I had a serious meeting I could not avoid.
Not a problem. So we can now go to new business, item number 6. And the first thing is a discussion with Chief Saylors on drafting an RFP for the OVAD system. And in particular, should this include both Kensington and El Cerrito? Can we team up with the El Cerrito grant writer? And who wants to volunteer to work on this? And I'll let you take that and say whatever you want.
I don't think this is the program you want to do. Okay. Well, it is there a better place we can sit on?
Will I go easily?
Right?
Oh,
it's I can stand on the table. The way this thing's going, I would be fine with it.
Thank you.
I need to.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've got to have you.
Beautiful place.
If you're interested in this program, I don't think you have to do an RFP. We still have 2 open contracts you can do that onto. That'll save you a lot of time and effort, right? Laguna Beach is still open. So you should be able to piggyback onto that without having to go through an RFP process. Your challenge is funding. Now, with El Cerrito, as I said earlier to you, but I'll repeat it to your group. El Cerrito has other priorities right now. Its primary priority is going to be its library and then its public safety building. And it's also trying to buy a lot of land. The church is for sale. So the LRAD systems are going to fall fairly low on it. I would not, if this is something you want to pursue, I wouldn't wait.
Don't forget the engine.
Oh, and we need a fire engine. And the fire engine costs are going up. Probably $200,000 next year because of emission requirements. So fire engine costs are skyrocketing. So Kensington, in the pursuit of this, is not going to be in a partnership with El Cerrito. But I can still confirm with Laguna Beach, make sure that their process is open. You can simply piggyback on that if you find the funding. The question of whether you can partner with the grant writer that El Cerrito is contracting with, I don't think so, but I'll ask. And I'll see what the answer is on the grant writer, right? If they'd be willing to do some time. We have monthly meetings, and I can reach out to Dredd, to Jake personally.
That doesn't fall under our contract with El Cerrito?
No, it's not a fire department contract. It's the city of El Cerrito contract. Yeah, and so I'm just one division that uses this contractor. But I'll ask. It is some fuzzy territory there, and maybe it'll work.
Why not? And this is actually a question to start with Mary. Mary, last year we had $25,000 in the budget for grant writing. Is that still in there?
Yes, there's funding for a grant writer. I don't know the exact amount, but I think that sounds about right.
So if we have the $25,000, could we get El Cerrito to allow us to give $25,000 towards using that grant writer?
Let me ask. It makes sense. Because their whole contract was, I believe, less than $45,000 for the whole year. Right, so you should have plenty of money to fund one grant.
Right, so then it wouldn't have to be a gratis thing from El Cerrito.
Yeah.
So the grant writer is not an El Cerrito employee.
They're like contracts. Yeah, they're actually based out of
so we should be able to contract them.
Well, just
say the path of least resistance right now. Let me ask and see. All right, since I am the fire chief of this district as well, even though this is El Cerrito, would you be willing to do this process for us? We'll see. So can answer it. And if not, then how much would it cost if you did do this one process for us, if we took it out of the budget line and paid you correct? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But I have to ask that question.
This is specifically for the FEMA grant. For the overheads.
I haven't looked. Is that FEMA grant open now?
Do you have any? Yeah, that'll be next year's FEMA grant. Well, there's not just the FEMA grant, but you have to have a local kind of mitigation plan in place, which is not in place presently, because it's a 5-year cycle, and the last one was done in 2018 January, at least according to the Contra Costa webpage. And that then expires. So it's a 5-year cycle. FEMA will not entertain that local hazard mitigation plan. You'll have to have a new one in place.
And that is that's a joint El Cerrito contingent plan, right?
No, that's a county plan. That's
well, there's two things. Yeah. The county coordinates it, but the fire district has a local hazard mitigation plan. The police district also has a local hazard mitigation plan, and it's all part of the county joint plan. Mm-hmm. So, and I've sent it to you, Larry.
I've seen it.
You can see what it says. And so my presumption is that will have to be updated for FEMA to entertain a grant from the fire district for these LRADs.
The hazard mitigation plan, unless I was missing something, was written by the Contra Costa Fire Protection District, right? We had a contributing name on it of somebody that helped author it from El Cerrito, Kensington, one of the battalion chiefs. But he was simply listed as a contributor. He didn't write it. Is there a separate document that was authored specifically, and who wrote that?
And that was
say it again,
Michael Bond.
Michael Bond wrote your hazard mitigation plan in 2018.
Yes,
and that is
specifically towards Kensington, El Cerrito.
And Peter wrote the police district part of it.
So if you look at the El Cerrito, it's a 2-volume document. First volume is more generic discussion of hazards throughout the county and so forth. The second volume are the individual hazard mitigation plans for all the jurisdictions that participated in the county document. And so fire district has one, police district has one, specific to each. So, and it lists all the hazards and list the projects that are going to be undertaken to mitigate hazards, et cetera. So, and Larry then copied it and sent it on some time. So we have to go back and do another hazard, specific hazard mitigation.
Independent of the counties.
Well, it gets folded into the county's plan, and they send that overall plan apparently to FEMA, but it's specific to each jurisdiction. That's the problem.
But I think in order for ours to be valid, it would have to fall within the county. So I understand, I believe they're starting that process. I just don't know where they are with it yet.
Yeah, we at the fire police district have been trying to get some clarification from the county.
Yeah, David mentioned that.
Yeah, and we talked to my general manager about that. But it's unclear when they're going to start the process.
Well, so it expires this year. Now, does the county have to completely rewrite their part of it, or do we just have to rewrite the part that applies to Kennedy?
Well, it's my understanding is
so.
And it'll all be collected, and they that's the county's hazard mitigation plan.
And okay, then the county submits it to FEMA for approval. So you've got this large document that has all the hazard mitigation plans for all the different jurisdictions that are participating, including the fire district, the police district, and that's what FEMA is approving. And so it's expired. So every plan is 5 years, right? So it's expired. So to get the FEMA grant, we have to have a new hazard mitigation plan.
Which FEMA grant are you specifically targeting for this?
Well, there are a couple of my, I've looked at different ones. I couldn't tell you exactly which. But they, for example, they funded Paradise, FEMA did, for 21 of these devices.
Right.
So utilizing the same concept, if you will. That's the way I think we would want to approach it.
And you were seeing a 25% matching?
Well, that's the other part of the coin. Yeah, you have to call for 25%.
Yeah. Because every one of those grants usually has a different matching. And that's what I'm curious. I'll have to look and see which, send me an email, a link to which grant you were actually thinking about applying for, and then I can bring it to the grant writer.
I personally didn't make any recommendation on that. I just, looking at the availability of FEMA grants, what Paradise had done. My recommendation was, the small group that we had, three of us, that we pursue a FEMA grant without identifying.
Gotcha, okay. That changes things, because some FEMA grants are 10% matching, some are 5, some are 25.
This would be a 75% based on what Paradise achieved for the same. Yeah.
I think it's a BRIC grant, Building Resiliency, and it's
okay. Okay, that helps. Uh-huh. Okay.
75%.
Resilience. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are a couple of the options too that I've seen, but I have to do a little more research.
Okay.
What would be the most desirable? It would be a 75%.
Would the grant writer have recommendations
on
the best source of where to get these grants?
Yeah.
We're recommending a meeting with a grant writer once the board would be like, so we're knowledgeable about this and kind of like
primary part of the grant writer's job is to publish the book of grants that are open now and make recommendations to us. So I tell a grant writer, here's my wants and my needs. And then he publishes a book and says, okay, look, there's a grant coming out for field mitigation in a natural area. And we say, all right, yeah, let's pursue that. You know, depending on the matching, whether we can cover it in the budget or not. That's that. So, yeah, and we'll go for another FEMA grant in October for a fire engine again. That would probably, we'll get feedback somewhere in January. We did get feedback on one of our grants because so naturally we were Janet. So that's his job, is keep us up to date with those cycles, let us know when they're open, and then we submit.
And then the brick cycles just ended. Okay. And there are, another option would be pre-disaster mitigation plan, another 75% match.
Okay.
So, but I think all those cycles are pretty much ended for this year. But it doesn't matter anyways. Do you have a local hazard mitigation
plan? Well, I'll check with them and ask if we can submit our current hazard mitigation plan as it is now, if it can settle that.
Hillier just said that the BRIC grant was due August 18th.
Right, the cycles. Well, again,
we're in the same county at El Cerrito. We've submitted multiple FEMA grants over the last few months. So if there was a barrier to entry because of the hazard mitigation plan, it didn't hold us up.
Well, FEMA will consider a grant while your hazard mitigation plan is being completed.
No, but
we're in the same county.
The question is, when did FEMA approve the county's plan? And if it's in January, I don't know. Again, they're gonna evaluate the plan, the FEMA grant application. But if you don't have a hazard mitigation plan in place, then they won't sue.
That we've submitted multiple FEMA grants in
right.
Last few months.
But have they approved this?
They have. We haven't heard word on all of them. We did get denied on the Hillside Natural one, but it had nothing to do with the lack of hazard mitigation plan. That sounds like that would be more of a paper cut in the beginning when you filter down.
Right, but it, again, they will look at the grant, but you have to have an approved hazard mitigation plan in place at the time they issue the grant. And so if you don't have one, you could go through the process, but you could get denied at the end because you don't have one.
I'll ask.
Yeah.
Katie and Chris Hillard have their hands up.
Yes. Katie, you look like you're live. Go ahead. Katie, there?
Katie, you just need to unmute yourself.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, again, the reception is kind of spotty. So I don't know if the what the chief said about the LHMP right now, has he hired someone to rewrite one or what's the status? Because I know it's either expired or it will expire soon. So I don't know if the chief has contracted or appointed someone to write the new LHMP.
We don't know. No, it's not even on the way that it doesn't begin to plan.
Or what?
Can't hear you.
Did you hear that? The mic?
Oh, no one has a mitigation plan. That's a county thing.
Yeah.
So no, you have no one's writing one at this point. Is that correct?
No, not for El Cerrito. No.
Okay. Well, you know, Michael Bond, retired Battalion Chief Michael Bond, also fire marshal. He wrote the last two successfully. So I would recommend that you stick with a winner and talk to Michael Bond.
No, I mean, it is county. It's really the contact to make. You got to figure out where they are. I know my general manager has contacted the county and they've indicated they are planning for the process for a new hazard mitigation plan. When I know.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
it makes sense. The county writes a hazard mitigation plan.
I know there's also a WPP or wildfire protection plan for the county, which has the same structure and overall description of the county hazards, and then there's attachments for each fire protection district. And we submitted that in 2016. Dave Gibson is definitely involved in that.
That makes sense.
And Lance Mabels came to a couple of meetings,
right?
And I came to most of the meetings. So that's it sounds almost identical, except that instead of a hazard mitigation plan, it's a wildfire protection plan.
Yeah.
So it only pertains to wildfire. But in this case, we would, I don't think we care. But and it sounds probably, it has probably had a 5-year time limit as well. Which is all right because it would be 2016 or so. No, that would be expired by now. The 5 years or 10 years? Anyway, there's a plan similar to that for wildfires. My point. Okay. I see no hands raised. Any further questions for the chief on pursuing the LRAD? Otherwise, we can move on to the, well, actually covered pretty much of this, but the next item was revision of the hazard mitigation plan. But I think we've done that. My only question would be, if we have to have a hazard mitigation plan, are we going to have to wait until the county does one before we can do anything, or can we move ahead and with an amended plan of our own that we can show to FEMA? Because the county may not do anything in 10 years.
Well, all I can say is we benefited the county last
cycle. I don't know if anybody doing a hazard mitigation plan on their own, but that'd be something I'm missing. I mean, El Cerrito does, they're required to have emergency operations plan, an EOP plan.
Yeah.
That expires, that gets renewed, but hazard mitigation plan, that's typically a county thing. That
it's approved by the state, right? Yeah. The state has to approve it, so the county by the
right.
So, but I can't imagine your grant writer is submitting for grants that he knows
nope.
Can't get.
The
other piece of that, though, is to ask the grant writer, what are the rules around this? And in our case, we have further complications, which is that LRAD is not listed in our plan to date. So I think there might be this consistent with your actions of a plan that may be a criteria. We're all guessing. So maybe the question is, how do we find out?
Ask the grant writer would be the best choice. That's his job as a profession. He tells, and he does on our other grants we submitted for. You need to have this. Okay, this is here it is.
Yeah. When the last plan was made, the LRADs hadn't been vetted yet.
Right.
So obviously they couldn't make it into the plan. Right. Okay. Okay, next up is one that, and Chris Hilliard is on the line here.
Yeah, we can let Chris answer this.
Listening, and that has to do with CERT and an update on where it's going and is it going to be revitalized and what's its mission in the future and that sort of thing. So,
well, Chris, where's the status?
I just allowed him to speak. Maybe that will help, and then he can unmute.
Perfect. Hi.
Great.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. So the update is as follows. CERT basic courses, we're partnering with La Mirinda CERT, and those courses start September 14th and run every Thursday through the 9th of November. They start at 6:30 in the evening at the Wilder Art and Garden Center for most of the course. And then the exercises day or event will be at the Confire District Training Center on November 6th. And that one is at 6:00. And then November 9th, the graduation and the final session will be at the Orinda Community Center. So those are the, there's a winter course that I believe is in January. I would have to double check that though. Then currently the water storage and fire extinguisher sale is actually on now. So that's online at La Mirinda Cert. And La Mirinda Cert /supplies, I believe, but Google knows. That sale, as I mentioned, is open now. Anyone who places orders needs to designate El Cerrito Cert as the program. And that will get the order routed correctly. We are able to utilize the El Cerrito Corporation Yard. I think this might be our last sale at that location. We are, we have to shift the pickup hours this year to fit the recycling center's hours of operation. So the Friday pickup is October 20th, and that will be from 1 in the afternoon until 4:30. And then the 21st, which is a Saturday, will be 8 a.m. until noon. And the verbiage on the sale announcement is always the same. Please don't order if you can't pick up during those times. And we always have a few straggler orders, but we cannot leave anything at the Corporation Yard anymore. So that's what's happening with that. We also need volunteers for the kitting day when we actually build the kits in Moraga. That will be October 19th. And usually we meet around noon or 1 o'clock, and it's over in a couple of hours. And then the last bit is the future structure. The chief wants us to realign CERT with the Zone Haven maps, which has been part of the conversation as long as I've been involved. I think we started this conversation in 2019 about whether we should change the map. And here we are, and we should change the map. I apologize, I have to go back to my email to get the numbers exactly, but I sent maps. Here we are. Sorry. So the breakdown for station, the old station 65 rather, is ECK 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. So it's a pretty big area. Sorry, the population count is 9,000, about 7,600 vehicles, and almost 4,000 structures. So it's a pretty big area and includes all of Kensington and extends down into El Cerrito. The issue with maintaining the old CERT map is that any major event is going to trigger a lot of mutual aid response. And those zones, to my understanding, were built off of voting blocks, and they're very, very difficult to communicate. Whereas Zone Haven sort of is by its nature created to give a common operating picture to responding law and fire agencies. So aligning with that map means that anybody who comes to El Cerrito or Kensington will be able to understand that, as well as lining CERT up with the fire service. It makes good sense. There is a meeting on September 20th that we're going to use as an update for the organization. I will have visual aids, and we'll run everybody through that. I have a list of candidates. So between now and September 20th, that's going to all be communicated out, and we'll, I'm sure, get a lot back in to sift through before that meeting, but September 20th is the next big date.
When is that meeting on September 20th?
It's a general sort of block captain and cert meeting. It really grew out of one of the El Cerrito areas. And their questions are your questions. And the idea that there's any differentiation between Kensington cert and El Cerrito cert is, fire doesn't know a political boundary. So we need to accept that we have to function as a single organization.
Has the invitation gone out for that yet?
I'm sorry. Could you repeat?
Has the invitation gone out for that yet?
To one area. So no. But it is a month out, or close to a month. So I'll get it out this week. Absolutely.
And Chris, who's on that mailing list? Where's that mailing list from?
So. This is an excellent question. The El Cerrito Fire Department website has sort of a sign up about interest that indicates it feeds a constant contact account. When Chief Grappolo was here, he created a constant contact account that I've been maintaining that is sort of designated as the CERT account. Johnny and I need to talk about how we merge that, and I'll talk to Brenda about where and how the any contacts that come in through that website get vetted. But I will publicize that meeting via Nextdoor, Facebook, and then there are currently 1,600 email addresses and accounts with that CERT list. So I will use the largest megaphone that I have, and I will reach deep back into every correspondence that I've had since 2019 and make sure anyone who's interested in CERT hopefully gets that invite.
So Chris, I guess my comment would be from all that I can tell and all that I hear, at least in Kensington, CERT is pretty much dormant. CERT 6 is still alive and kicking, but most of the CERT areas don't really, there isn't any structure to the CERT program anymore. And it doesn't appear to be. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but I know CERT. CERT 4 hasn't had anybody on it for years. I used to be CERT 2, and that CERT 2 area fell apart. There's nobody on CERT 1. So I guess my question is this meeting on September 20th sounds a whole lot like the meeting that Dave Gibson had back in 2012, when CERT had fallen apart before. And so we need to not only train people, we need to get the organization back. And we can't, at this point, I don't think we can, for emergency preparedness purposes, we can't really plan on using CERT as part of the equation because we don't even know who they are.
Right. So it's a good point. So Larry, I think you probably remember my first CERT meeting when we were at station what is now 65, we were up off the Arlington by the golf course. So I have never seen. So first of all, CERT is a training curriculum, and CERT organizations look very, very different from place to place. And yes, my understanding is that Chief Gibson's vision was well enough communicated and took form. When I came in, I very quickly recognized that there was no capacity to communicate clearly across the entire region, city, you know, and that records hadn't been kept of CERT graduates. So even, you know, as you said, you know, knowing, so CERT is a curriculum, and Chief Pagoni never intended to activate CERT. And so, yeah, it had pretty well fallen apart by the time I came into the picture. And many of the area coordinators had email lists that they felt were shared with them in confidence that they would not share them then with me. And so I created a tool to sort of build communication capacity, and the 1600 email lists is sort of the culmination of 3 or 4 years of that tool being in existence. And I understand Chief Gibson's intended structure, and I think that Chief Saylor's concept of a CERT response in a large event and is quite similar, but we're definitely at a point now where we have to consider that this is a total rebuild.
We need people. we need volunteers. CERT is community. Like the fire department will partner with, you know, anybody that is willing to step up and help, and hopefully we'll have some high members come through the training, right? But it requires people from the community to actually do this.
But then what do those people do? Like, I'm supposed to be Area 3, but that's going to be going away. But, so I need more direction.
We need some drills. Yeah. We need some drills. But we don't have the ability to do drills. We don't have contacts or people to reach out to. So hopefully when we're done, we have a few things coming up for our interagency drills. Hopefully when we're done with the training, then we can actually see who got through it. Mm-hmm. And see what drill we want to run first, right? Because we want to have a good community response team. You only have 10 firefighters on duty every day. They're going to be largely doing assessments and then relying on you to feed information back to us, right? And they'll be broken up into divisions. You have 3 fire stations. Each fire station will oversee 1 division as a geographical area. And in those divisions, used to have CERT groups, but going to Zone Haven makes more sense simply because of the evacuation orders. It wouldn't be a good idea to have a CERT group that spans multiple Zone Haven zones and evacuate a chunk of it.
Yes.
Right? So whether we like Zone Haven or not, it doesn't matter. The reality is that there it is, and that'll be the order they'll evacuated in. So it makes sense to actually organize our CERT people into those blocks underneath one of those 3 divisions, right? Mm-hmm. So that the fire department can partner with you and communicate with you in a chain of command and organized fashion during a real event.
What type of drills?
So we just completed our trench drill. If we had a good organized search drill, it would have been awesome to have people out there. We are coming up on the division supervisor and the safety officer, but the big one is October. It's going to be a 3-day drill with the movement of the Hayward Fault as an EOC drill. So we'll bring in all of our key players, civilians from City Hall and Kensington PD, to go through a 3-day scenario where we get ourselves through the first operational period, filling out our immediate interaction plans. It's the vendor that's coming in was one of the incident commanders during the Hayward Fault. He's a good friend of mine. He's from LA County, so he'll be mentoring us through this process. When you have a large event like that, there are key positions that the civilians, both the elected officials for Kensington and for El Cerrito, and your civilians in City Hall, they have to fill, like finance officer, logistics officers, they all have to be trained up. So this training will fill those gaps, right? to get through the first operational period. But if we have room in class, I hope to bring in some key cert players to participate as well.
So, question. So, whose major scenario? Is the scenario, the Hayward scenario, already been made? And then is it going to include some aftershocks?
No, but it's going to include a 22 second shade, the 7-up fault with damage to 55 or 51,000 buildings, surface movement of 3 to 6 feet, vertical movement of 1 to 2 feet. That's as forecasted in the Hayward fault. And we basically have our playbook to go off of, which is the EOP, right? So whether we like it or not, this is the published EOP, Emergency Operations Plan, for the city of El Cerrito. And then both of our documents will come out of this original document and Hayward, right? As a scenario that you want, right? If you've seen this, right? So
I watched the movie.
The goal.
I thought that had actually an aftershock in it. I guess it
did. Oh, it probably does. But our scenario is to get through this logistical process of getting our internal people trained up. And a 22-minute shake with that will keep them busy.
Okay.
7 major landslides, liquefaction along the Bay Area, right? Failure of the BART tunnel, failure of the BART trussle at liquefaction points, damage to all your bridges, damage to all your major highways. You don't need an aftershock to get the point across to that EOP that stands up of going, okay, here's our incident priorities, life, property, environment, here's your strategic objectives, here's your operational objectives, here's your tactical objectives. Let's start making those work in our first operational period before we hand it off to a tight team. The goal is to survive the first 72 hours before a type team gets in there, you know, type 1 or type 2, 3 incident management team, because they're the ones that come in and then they take over the large event and they start coordinating with DOD and the FEMA teams that come in to help you out. But the goal is for a city like El Cerrito and Kensington is to survive that first gap and to do it well, right? You don't move the needle a lot, but the things that you do well. You don't want chaos, and you don't want to look like Katrina, right? So that drill scheduled October 17th, 18th, and 19th in coordination with the Great Shakeout. So the final scenario is October 19th. And believe me, you have been in my thoughts to specifically invite you if I have room in this class. Yeah. There's a bit of a response I have. I only have room for 20 people. And the phone numbers.
So these 20 people you're talking about are staff members.
We'll have our four battalion chiefs in because they all have to be split up, and then we'll have our department heads from El Cerrito, and then we'll also have Kensington PD, right? Because they have to be split up as well. And then we'll invite our neighboring agencies from Richmond to Berkeley, Albany, right? So they can send somebody because coordination with them is going to be key. Chris and I talked about this briefly. We're moving in the direction of the solid CERT team by then. I would love to invite CERT members in to participate as well. Just depends on how much room I have. The good news is being through this process already many times in my life, I know that this will be the first of many drills because it will pull some heads out of the sand. And it will turn some light bulbs on for people. And next year, we will start filling in the gaps, right? It's an iterative process. We'll find we did some things very well. We'll find that we did some things terrible. Then next year, it'll be prime up. Let's do it again because we weren't as good as we thought we were. Yes. Yes.
Or you just have new personnel that have to be moved into the thing. Things to turn over.
We have a brand new finance director in El Cerrito. We have some new department heads and they all have to control.
Eugenie just did their internal earthquake scenario too. So I was thinking of theirs. It's too bad you guys didn't do it all together.
Yeah. So we have to get our team up to minimum standards. And like I said, we have our never published playbook to go by. Whether you like it or not, that's the published playbook. So we'll run it through its paces.
So you'll be actually opening the emergency operations center.
We'll be operating on the last day out of the city hall at El Cerrito.
Yeah. And are the
Is Kira Weckl going to be involved in at all in this?
Hopefully.
Okay.
Having no spot.
Howdy, Debbie.
So, I know how to speak formally. Howdy, Debbie. Formally,
yeah.
Not just howdy.
Well, the problem is you're certainly not going to have a CERT organization by October.
But if I have room, then hopefully I can at least invite Chris or maybe one or two other people if I have my interest. We've got people from the training, right? And people that are super interested in taking over command of those divisions. Then the more that we can bring in. So if you're asking for things that you can do, we're going to have a series of drills where you can start to participate. And then in the pipeline after that, we're a year out from our active shooter drill. So we have to start planning for something in January, February.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It is a lot of training. Like I said, completing our trench, wrapping up our confined space. This agency, it's redlining. We just stepped on the gas a year ago. And we're just filling as many operational gaps as we can as fast.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Well, we'll see what happens at this September 20th meeting.
Hopefully, enough of the turnout will have a lot of interest, right? And we'll have people signing up for training. I'm really hopeful that's the way it goes. And you have some great CERT organizations to model. Right, you have to reinvent the wheel. You have some very functional CERT organizations. The one that's training us now would be a great model to emulate. You have to reinvent the wheel and literally just do what they did, and you'll have a minimum functioning team.
Yeah, we got to involve like Red Cross at all.
Red Cross is in the scenario, but we actually won't have Red Cross there. They're fantastic, and I've used them a lot in real life. They're just not going to add much value to the drill other than like a ghost player, right? They're in the IAP as well as DOD, right? So you have Red Cross, you have the Salvation Army, you have all of your bottling plants, your brewery plants, because one of your operational objectives is potable water, right? So you go through this checklist of things that you reach out to. Your nonprofit third parties and your for-profit third parties, including your grocery distributions, your grocery stores. So, but they'll just be on the docket.
Question.
Yes.
Have you ever thought of pre-positioning water as an example ahead of in preparation for an earthquake? I know when the Northridge went down, one of the big issues was water.
A little water, always, yeah.
And they had tanks, but then Miller Brewing actually started putting together water in their cans instead of beer.
Yeah.
And so one of the thoughts when I was working with the state, I ran the program and oversaw public water systems. So one of my concerns was public water systems going down. Instead, one of the thoughts was pre-positioning water in the form of water bottles or water cans so that they can be used after the earthquake, readily available, as opposed to having tankers come in and distribute water, which happened in the Northridge in LA, or Miller, their production from beer to water. But anyways, just thought.
It's a great idea. Not within my authority. Or
no.
Yeah.
And as a school does, we have water. The school
grounds. Right. I mean, it's important. That's one of the big issues is and thinking about pre-positioning it as opposed to reacting.
The water is an object. Well, I think that's the point to water drill sales, right? So
that's why Chris is raising his hand.
Yes.
I can tell you that right now.
Thank you.
Chris. I would say Chris's hand first.
Oh, yes,
it was.
And Chris, you wanna clarify that?
Yes, I'm sorry, I'm not sure if I'm muted.
No, we can hear you.
Okay. Actually I just ran through and redid the totals and went back and forth with Duncan. And We've distributed a significant tens of thousands of gallons of water storage capacity with all of it with instructions, and it's all in food safe containers. The way that things work after an earthquake, I ran around in Haiti, and if people intend to shelter in place for the roughly 2 months until East Bay Mud says they'll be able to fill our reservoirs up this hill, then you're going to be refilling jugs. And that's why we have a variety of sizes, and we recommend that people buy the kits that come with bleach. They're food safe plastic, food grade plastic. They come with bleach and instructions, everything you need. And 2.5 gallons weighs just about 20 pounds. So, you know, the 5 gallons are great, but it's going to be 40 pounds, which is quite a lot to lug back and forth to the water truck when it passes by. And after, you know, an earthquake, if you're going to shelter in place or think that you're going to be sheltering in place, that's what the reality of the situation is that, what I've heard with the 2,200, I think, water main breaks that are in the Hayward scenario, the haywired scenario. What I've always heard is that those breaks are going to cause a vacuum with the hill, with this, you know, us being sitting on top of a hill, that our entire water system is going to be probably empty. So yes, drinking water will be an immediate immediately in short supply. So that's why we do the water storage containers and encourage people to have their own drinking water stored on hand.
We have Scott, his hand up.
Scott A, yes.
Go ahead, Scott.
Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, just one thing regarding the earthquake drill, and then something Chris noted earlier on CERT water distribution and kitting. Both those are occurring on October 19th. So I don't know if y'all want to look at that. I assume Chris might be involved in the drill.
Yeah, that's a great shakeout. Oh. Yeah, that's the third. That'll be the third day of our class.
Just some overlap there. Chris, you could probably look at that closer and comment on that.
I don't. There's always the possibility to move it, the kitting, but it's pretty quick event and definitely worth doing. So I'll note it. Definitely, we'll look into that.
Okay, any further questions on CERT for the chief or for Chris?
Well, maybe we should, you know, I know a lot of my neighbors, and I have water in my house in a 55-gallon drum. Uh-huh. But maybe we should be reminding people that to either make sure that they need to refresh their water, how long has it been, get them to think about it, because I find it's very easy to forget that I have that thing because it's stowed away. So I don't know if maybe Kensington, part of some preparedness materials, you can bring up the idea that people need to start refreshing their water again, or maybe get more.
Sorry, Danielle. One of the folks at La Mirinda CERT happens to be a retired EPA scientist and a water safety expert. And as long as the water is in food grade plastic and it's treated and then properly sealed, it is good indefinitely. If you get water off the shelf in the store, yes, it has a shelf life and needs to be rotated. The reason that we strongly recommend people get the kits is because they get everything they need and that water is good. And keeping in mind, this is an emergency supply of drinking water. The World Health Organization's definition of potable water is the number of parts per million of chlorine bleach, it's pool water, more or less, right? It's not something, this isn't luxury, this isn't Perrier, this is something that you can drink after you know, a disaster. So you wouldn't want to drink this for any length of time. The World Health Organization standard is high enough that the half-life of chlorine is a carcinogen, and you would not want to drink it all the time. That's the point. That's kind of the point I make when people are picking up their water, is put it in a food safe or food grade plastic, treat it properly, seal it up, and hope that you never see those blue jugs out in El Cerrito and Kensington, because it means something bad has happened.
And we'll turn that message into something for the public to be reminded of for the shelf life. So that'll be a reminder that'll be published.
Okay, first, one more question about September 20th. This is the first I've heard of this CERT meeting. And I've had several people ask me, well, when is CERT going to get organized again? And I gave them the answer that I don't know, because that up until now. Is this meeting by invitation only, or has it been publicized?
No, it has not been publicized. As I mentioned, this was originally sort of came about from one of the El Cerrito CERT zones, and we're just going to swing the barn doors wide open and make this a proper kickoff.
Where is it going to be?
It isn't. It's going to be Zoom, which I think is probably the best way to do this. Because we want the greatest number of attendees possible. We could make it hybrid. That's, again, something that would be news at this point, but there's no reason why we could not make this a hybrid meeting, but the current plan is to do it Zoom.
In the evening, I hope, for people who work?
It is in the evening. It's at 7 p.m.
Maybe you could invite the members of the Emergency Preparedness Committee to it.
You are all invited. And as of right now, so basically the chief and I met, I think it was 2 days ago, and went over this plan. So you're getting it. This is early news. The only other people that have it are people in that EC6, I believe it was.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you got the EC6, because they're definitely the only, the most functional unit at this point. So they do weekly drills, or weekly radio flight.
Radio check-ins.
Yeah. And,
right.
I think they have done maybe not monthly drills, but they do several drills a year.
Okay, are we good?
I think we are. I think we've exhausted the agenda, unless there's any further reports from committee members. That's the last thing on the agenda before we took. I think we've pretty much got everybody reported out. So I'll just say that the next regular meeting of the Emergency Preparedness Committee of the Kensington Fire Protection District will be held on September 28, 2023 at 3 p.m. in person with committee members at the Kensington Community Center, with hybrid option for attendees and guest speakers, unless noticed otherwise for the ground. With that, you're in the meeting.
Thank you.
The email has already been sent off to the grant writer.